Good morning, everybody. Okay, so who tweets? Raise your hand if you tweet. Okay, so I know stuff like I know Chris Cable and I know Catherine, so you're on the hook for tweets during this session. Everybody else, tweet it, get the word out there, keep that conversation going. So today we're going to talk a little bit about filling the gap, the role of philanthropy in public health, workforce, interest, and need survey. And if you look at the acronym, that's PHWINS. Because you need a good acronym in public health for it to really work. So let me tell you a little bit about the de Beaumont Foundation. So de Beaumont is a private foundation. We're in Bethesda. We're national. We're domestically focused. And we really believe that a strong governmental public health system is vital to the nation's health and safety. And so we really focus on training, infrastructure development, and data and information. And, you know, the way that de Beaumont works, so who watches Shark Tank? Okay? If you don't watch Shark Tank, you're totally missing something. Friday nights, 9 o'clock, ABC. I am not sponsored by Shark Tank. And so you have two kinds of people that go into Shark Tank. You have the people who come in looking for cash, and then you have the people who come in looking for cash and a strategic partner. Right? So Damon John, who founded FUBU, he's one of the sharks, and if you have a clothing line, you want him to give you money and buy equity into your product, and you also want his strategic partnership. We're kind of like that at de Beaumont. We are a strategic partner. We are a half think tank, half philanthropy. And so we actually really deeply engage with our grantees. So when you think about public health, when you think about the public health literature, what you think about is correlates of disease, right? Prevention strategies. You think about the outputs. But rarely do we really think about the inputs, right? The people who are responsible for achieving those outcomes that lead to our improved health. And so here's a great quote from Rolltwing and Novick. And Novick is the editor of the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. And if you care at all about public health practice and about systems and you haven't read that journal, you are doing yourself a huge disservice. And so you need to right away Google Journal of Public Health Management and Practice and start reading the journal. And what they had said was the workforce is the most important element in our collective efforts in ensuring the public's health. But when you really think about where we have been with our public health research, our public workforce research, we have a couple of themes, right? We've definitely worked on counting it, right? Enumerating who's in the public health workforce. How many do we have? We have the ASTO and NACHO profiles. So ASTO and NACHO do surveys amongst the health departments where the unit of analysis is the health department. So somebody takes that survey and gathers all of the survey data for the health department as a whole. So you can say, in this health department, they lost 88 positions. In that health department, they had a 38% reduction in budget. We've also have varying, you know, ASTO, NACHO, CSTE, et cetera, do membership surveys. And we have individual studies in various states. But this left some gaps, right? We have very limited understanding about the diversity in gender, age, education, ethnicity, and functional roles, because none of the workforce research can give us that. It's just not designed to do that. And there was really no nationally representative information on the beliefs, attitudes, opinions, and experiences of individual public health workers. So let me tell you how I come at this. I am not a philanthropist. I don't particularly like being called a philanthropist. I am a public health practitioner. I cut my teeth in Philadelphia, at the Philadelphia Department of Health, where rats ran across the desk. It was a good old city health department, right? That's where I cut my teeth. And then I went to Texas and was a practitioner there. I was in that health department. I was in the Georgia health department. So I'm a public health practitioner who happens to be working in philanthropy. And what I find interesting is when we want to know what the public health workforce has to say, we do a convening, right? I mean, we've all done it. We have a lot of philanthropy people, a lot of people work in foundations, raise your hand. We all do the convenings, right? And who do you invite to the convenings? It's like when you have a family meeting and you want to make a decision for the family. You rarely invite the kids, but you definitely invite the parents. And so you end up doing convenings of state health officials, local health officials, division directors. And so and you tend to invite the same ones over and over again because they're the ones you know who will give you good information. But what it does is it gives you a very small group of people who are actually inputting on workforce policy. And so what we wanted to do at de Beaumont was really think about how do we get the voice of the actual public health worker. How do we access that information? How do we give them voice? Right? That was really important to us. But who's going to fill that gap? We saw the need. The need was we have no nationally representative data of the public health workforce at an individual level. And we've all known that gap exists. This wasn't new, but the question was who would fill it? And that's where philanthropy comes in. And that's why philanthropy can be important. And when I think about the role that we have in philanthropy, I kind of frame it in this sense. We can make grants, right? We have cash. We know that. That's one of our assets. It is not our necessarily most important asset, and it is not always the asset that we should lead with. Because information that we produce and the voice that we have can be so much more impactful. So again, I was in governmental public health, which meant I only could say so much for so long, right? Before I would annoy the governor or my state health official or representative so-and-so or representative so-and-so's wife or husband. And next thing you know, I'm in the commissioner's office and they're saying, you can't say this anymore. I remember back in one of my states having a breastfeeding program where if you had thrown a woman out or asked her to stop breastfeeding in your establishment, we'd send you a letter. The letter would say, hey, don't do that. It's uncool. It's against the law, kind of, sort of. And we got blowback from our governor that it's really not public health's job to regulate business, which I found odd, because if government didn't regulate business, we'd have five-year-olds making shoes in Georgia, and that's not a good idea. So it really kind of is our job. But that's the blowback. That's the blowback in government. That happens. But in philanthropy, we have voice, and it can be powerful. So let's look at how we filled this gap using these three things. So the first thing we did was we partnered with ASTO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. I had the great pleasure of working with their outgoing ED, Paul Jarris, and their chief science officer, Katie Sellers. And we all got together and said, we need to do this. We can fund it, we can give you a lot of leadership, but what we need from you is access to the health departments. And they were fabulous, because what I wanted to do, was a convenience sample. It's like, let's just see who would answer our survey. No one's ever done this, so we just, convenience sample, that'll work. And actually, there's someone from my staff, J.P. Leiter, who said, Brian, we should really push this. We should try to do a representative sample, which would mean contacting every HR director in every one of the states and asking them to provide us a list of all of their employees from which we could sample randomly. And I said, JP, that's crazy. That's not going to work. They're not going to give you the list. Lo and behold, 37 states, 12 big cities, and several members of our local pilot gave us those lists. And so this is what allowed us to have this nationally representative sample. And it was ASTO, it was their affiliate, so AmChip, who does maternal child health, Safe States, who does injury, et cetera. They were all involved in this because, they do their individual member surveys, but we needed something nationally representative that had alignment, and so we could actually say something and inform national policy. So numbers, someone once told me this. So, the first four letters are numbers, it's num, and so it's very numbing. And I'm an epi, I love numbers. But numbers can be numbing. Information is what's engaging. And so as a philanthropy with ASTA, we set about to create new knowledge. And all of this knowledge is housed in a current supplement to the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. There are 15 articles in that supplement. And we have, so Catherine Patterson, who's going to raise her hand. Catherine has these wonderful six-page fold-out infographics that gives some of the top line findings. So there she is. Vanna is showing our. Ooh. So if you're a science geek, get the journal supplement. If you want to know how to move action, the infographic will do you just fine. If you look at this is an example. We see, so 75% of the workforce is women, but women still have a pay gap in public health, very much like nursing, right? Female dominated, but still men have the. Men have the higher pay. You can see the gradation there in pay by degree, and 40% of the entire public health workforce is not particularly happy with their pay and salary. This is interesting as well, looking at workforce turnover. Average age of the public health workforce is 48, and the big thing here is by 2020, 40% say they're going to be gone. And more importantly, a fifth of all public health workers say they're out of there in the next year. Okay, and then you look at the West. That's 26% of the folks living in the West say within a year they're out. Right? So this is important information that we needed to know in order to design really thoughtful workforce policy. And so when you think of the voice, and this is where that comes in, we're blogging, we're doing different things to get this information out, because if you don't know there's a problem, you can't solve it. Right? Our whole health model. Early detection and prevention, right? You'd want to know if you have cancer when it just started, not you know, when you are tumor riddled and about to expire. It's not the wrong time to look at that. So for us, having this information now, being able to act on it now, getting it out, which is part of the infographic, doing the blogging, and there's a beautiful thing again in philanthropy. Astro's a huge partner. They're fabulous. They're a membership organization. There's things they can't say. We are never in that position to say there are things we can't say. So we want to push this agenda. We want to be very aggressive with these data. And here are some of the really cool things that WINS has been able to already do. Now, these data literally were collected in November of last year, November and December of 14, and the journal supplement is out now. So it's very fast turnaround in less than a year. But here's some of the quotes from CDC. PHWINS provides more information for making public health a more competitive and attractive sector. CDC will use public health WINS data to inform the creation, implementation, and evaluation of CDC's workforce development activities. That's Judy Monroe, former state health official in Indiana, and now the director of what is more colloquially known as OSTILT. And here from Sarah Linda from HRSA. HRSA applauds the efforts of the foundation to conceive, conduct, and communicate the results of the PHWINS. This first ever nationally representative survey and its unprecedented response rate, 46% by the way, provides invaluable insight into the interests and needs of the workforce. So not only have we provided a new source of data for folks, but because of your standing as a philanthropy and your access to different people, we've already been able to engage the two largest healthcare funders at a federal level. So this is it's a really good example of, again, how we're using these data, because what we know is data are not an end, right? They are a means to an end. And so none of this work that I know that we've done was just to publish stuff. I mean, that's cool, builds my CV, makes my mom happy. Look, Brian published a paper. But really what the point is how do we move this to action? Right? What are the new policies that we're going to use? How are we going to move this forward? And so what we've already done is then back to grant making, because everything's a circle. We're now bringing to our board a $800,000 grant to ASTO to really move PHWINS to action. Okay, where's the community of, developing a community of practice, identifying, promoting best practices, identifying, promoting health department specific policies. Here's the thing. One of our biggest challenges in public health, those of us who have worked in local and state public health departments, is federalism, right? Each of us are our own little entity. And so there is no standard of training in public health. There is no standard of much of anything that isn't come with some funding. So, for us, wouldn't it be great to use these data and start to move some action, to move a voluntary voluntary supervisor training based on the job satisfaction results? Wouldn't it be great to have a change in policy that said this year it was something to the respect of 30% of the people said that they felt that their work was that they were using their creativity. How do we move that number? We do that by working with our partners. And so this is where philanthropy is a catalyst, is a driver to action, but we did it through data. So important information as I wrap up. A lot of this information from De Beaumont is out on our blog. It's HuffingtonPost.com/my name. The infographic, this is where you can find the infographic. This is where you can find the journal supplement. If you're really cool, you'll go to our booth at 1035, and all of these things are at the booth and there for free until tomorrow at noon, where they go up for a premium. So get them now while they're free. Leave cards if you want to be added to our distribution list. We have the blogs and important foundation-related information. Follow the foundation on Twitter and myself on Twitter. And if you are a Twitter geek and you are not joining the Public Health Talks chat every first and third Monday of every month, you really need to. It's a great place to talk about public health issues. And this was kind of the philanthropic perspective on WINS. Tomorrow we're doing the deep dive, the real methody, geeky data stuff. And that's at 12:30 to 2 in W175A. So that's my story with Public Health WINS. Use it. That's the point of it. One, use it. Two, if you're here from a philanthropy, start trying to figure out how you can start to create some data that fills some gaps for people that need it. And if you are here from a public health department or from the practice community, use these data to change where we are, because I view public health right now as when the dinosaurs started to see the asteroid. And we either can go back to eating our greens, or we can start doing something a little differently. If we choose the former, we'll get the same outcome. If we choose the latter, then we'll be ready and prepared to deal with the challenges of the future and really make us the healthiest nation in the next generation. So thank you, guys.